Hi, everyone. Welcome back to the Change Your Mind podcast, where we explore personal development, spirituality, and science. I'm your host, Chris Ashley. I'm really excited for my guest today. He's got a PhD in psychology. He's a doctor of chiropractic, but he's also really into conscious leadership. And as many of you know, I'm launching the Leadership Academy with the Los Angeles Tribune. So I feel like we're very aligned for a great conversation. Yeah. First, a couple quick announcements. Head over to the links in the show notes. You're going to find a lot there. You'll find ways to connect with my amazing guests. You'll find ways to connect with me. You'll get updates on all my projects that are going on, find courses, coaching, free downloads, way to sponsor the podcast. And as always, this podcast is part of the Los Angeles Tribune Podcast Network. We are doing amazing things in the personal development realm. Massive events pretty much every month. I was just on stage with Dean Graziosi, speaking of leadership. He's amazing. And Joseph McClendon and Jim Quick. So come be a part of it. We're doing some really big things. What if the one thing keeping you stuck is the way you think? Welcome to Change Your Mind with Chris Ashley, the podcast where science meets spirituality and mindset becomes your most powerful tool for transformation. I'm Chris Ashley, author of Change Your Mind to Change Your Reality, trainer, speaker, and lifelong seeker. For years, I battled trauma, depression, anger, chronic illness, low self-worth, and the weight of old stories. Until I discovered how to rewire my mind, reconnect with my divine nature, and consciously create a new reality from the inside out. This show is here to help you do the same. Each week, we explore the intersection of personal development, spirituality, and science, diving into topics like healing, emotional mastery, entrepreneurship, resilience, and the quantum nature of reality. You'll hear powerful stories, gain practical tools, and real conversations that will help you change your perspective, get unshakable confidence, and live the vision your soul has always known is possible. Whether you're navigating a major life shift, building your dream business, or seeking deep healing and alignment, you're in the right place. So if you're ready to break through, take back your power, and create a life on your terms, this is your moment. Let's break free from the patterns that hold us back, awaken to who we truly are, and rise. Your transformation starts now. All right, so with me today, I have Ron Stotz. And Ron is a 3-time best-selling author with a PhD in psychology and a doctor in chiropractic. He's explored the depths of ancient wisdom and the latest in psychological, neurological studies, and leadership as he guides entrepreneurs and executives into the highest levels of conscious leadership. So welcome. I'm so happy you're here, Ron.
Glad you got all that out.
I know. It was a tongue twister for a second. How are you today?
Doing well. Yeah.
Good.
Enjoying life.
Good. As you should. So I always start my episodes off the same way, and that is by asking my guests, what is their origin story? So what is it that put you on this path to want to study all this ancient wisdom and psychology and work on leadership with all these executives?
I think it really was the best of times and the worst of times. You know, I kind of grew up the all-American kid, and I was a national rowing champion, and you know, by 18, I figured I had it all figured out and was ready to go. And I made a little judgment error, and I joined the Marine Corps because that was kind of, you know, my father's military background sort of led me to think that that was the next thing. And turned out that was the antithesis of what was the right direction for me to go. And I lost a lot of friends in Vietnam, and it was, you know, just, I got out on a medical discharge, but it took me years to recover. And the following years were just such a tumult of chaos and uncertainty and me trying to figure out who I was and letting go of all that I'd been taught and really going, well, who am I? What's important to me? And, you know, I did have a chemical imbalance due to PTSD. And so I had a choice to either deal with suicidal tendencies or to get my life together. And, I chose the path of you know, who am I? What am I capable of? And that was the beginning of my journey, which was quite contrary to anything I had done in my life. And but that journey took me quite literally in the depths of who I am and the awareness of who I am, and just been had tremendous spiritual experiences that allowed me to recognize and the potential that we all have. And just as I figured it all out for myself, I began having people ask me to help them figure it out for themselves. And that empowering others became really a great interest and enjoyment to me. So here I am, 45, 50 years later.
Thank you for sharing that. I feel like war is one of those things that we all know is horrific, but I can't, I'm sure like no one can even properly imagine what it's like to go through that, especially to lose friends.
How human beings can even conceive of still being engaged in war is beyond me, really is. Yeah,
it is horrific. And it's crazy that there's still wars going on. And I'm glad that you're one of the people who made it out. I know people who, a guy I went to high school with took his own life after Afghanistan. And like, I mean, it happens a lot. So, you know, that's really great that you made other choices and were able to. So what was like that first pull? Cause you know, you talk about how you studied a lot of like ancient wisdom and you had spiritual experiences. Like what was the first thing that kind of set you on that path?
You're going to the heart of it here. Not probably aware of that, but you know, I, to be honest with you, had decided to commit suicide. I just didn't know, you know, it wasn't a dramatic thing. It was just like I didn't see another choice for me. I didn't know how to move forward in life. I had lost my wife and custody of my two kids, and just, you know, it was complete loss. And so, you know, I hiked into the woods and spent a couple of days preparing myself and deciding whether that was the best option for me, and decided it was. And when I woke up the next morning, I was sitting on a big boulder. I had a large hunting knife in my hand, and I said, God, if there's anything you want to mention at this point, it'd be a good time. And there was just the silence of the forest around me. And so I took that large hunting knife and thrust it full force towards my heart. And as it was penetrating the skin, I literally dissolved in a white ball of light, and was experiencing, you know, no sense of body, no sense of the place where I was. It was just this white ball of light and a deep sense of the perfection, the oneness of the universe. I felt like I'd just been immersed in just this enlightened moment. And it, trust me, at that age, I had no idea what any of that was. And I'm not sure how long it lasted, but when I came out of it, the knife was quite a long ways away. I must have had thrust it the other way. And I knew I had purpose. I didn't know what that purpose was, but I trusted the perfection of the universe that I had experienced, and went and lived on an island for 8 months and kept my feet in a wood stove and walking on the beach and reading the Bible and anything else I could find. And I think that's really where I began to discover the power of breathing, the power of silence, the power of being present, and began my inner journey of really discovering who I was. And that journey still goes on today, of course, but it's about becoming self-aware. It's about becoming emotionally intelligent initially, and then it becomes more okay. And what's that definition of self continues to expand as you quiet the mind and explore the silence and journey into the light and recognize that you really are at one with all of existence. And in those higher levels of consciousness, you begin to explore higher intentions, like how do I create a more conscious and caring world? And so that's what I'm doing.
Thanks for your vulnerability and sharing that. That is a hell of a way to take your own life, stabbing yourself in the heart. That takes some serious conviction. Did you actually like penetrate your chest, or did you?
Yes.
So, okay.
I don't know. I mean, I was a very big, strong kid. I really was. And how I stopped how that thrust was stopped is way beyond any physics that I understand. So, yeah.
That's a really powerful experience that you essentially had a near-death experience.
Or, yeah, and a lot of other experiences within the one. Oneness with God, oneness with the universe. Yeah.
Well, a lot of people, all people who have had near-death experiences experience those things.
Yeah. You know,
how did you get out of there? Were you like seriously injured?
No, I wasn't. I was bleeding, but no, I wasn't. And I realized that, okay, I've been guided here. I came for what I was looking for, you know, whether to do that or not. And so I just, you know, hiked out.
Got a message.
Yeah, a bit of a message there. A lot of clarity to it that didn't leave me any doubt. And so I became fascinated with how do I recreate that experience. And so I got seriously involved in meditation and, of course, got to the place where I could recreate that oneness, that experience, and that level of knowing and being and dissolving in the infinite. And so I did that for years and years and years. But I was also studying psychology and wanted to know more about the body. So I got a doctor of chiropractic. I'm kind of the old mind, body, spirit guy. So
yeah, you've got everything covered.
Yeah.
So were you ever a practicing psychologist or a practicing chiropractor?
I have been and am still a practicing psychologist. I have been for about 45, 50 years. And chiropractic was more, I was going to learn, I use the breath a great deal in my work. I had centers in Switzerland and America, and I sent about 30 people through yoga training. So I was very interested in learning more about the body. And so that when I was talking about it, I had a deep knowledge of it, not just a superficial awareness. And
so it was to deepen your own knowledge then?
Pardon me?
So it was to deepen your own knowledge?
It really was. You know, the college had me teaching the psychology and just the whole concept of what chiropractic was about, which I identified with quite deeply. And so I was a chiropractor for a couple of years. I had with my wife, who I had met in chiropractic school, we opened a kind of a mind, body, spirit practice in Mill Valley, a little town in San Francisco area. And we did that for a few years. But I just, you know, in chiropractic, everybody's kind of keep coming in saying, you know, fix this pain, fix that pain. And I was hoping I could have them take a look at the bigger picture of what was really causing those problems. And they seemed to have little interest in that. So I sort of moved away from that in terms of a practice and just back into the deeper psychological, spiritual work.
Do you incorporate the spirituality into your psychology practice?
I don't think you can avoid that.
Yeah. Well, I'm just curious. I mean, I've gone to a lot of therapy in my life, and I've never had a therapist who, you know, had that other kind of mentality.
I don't think anybody would mix me up with a traditional therapist. I'm really known more as a transformational coach, transformational therapist. My work really takes people down to the core of their being and helps them retrace and heal all their childhood issues. And really the goal of that is, you know, we came up with a program for getting love as an infant because we needed that love to survive and we needed that connection and we wanted love more than anything else. And so we opted for getting as much love as we could by trying to be whoever anybody else wanted us to be. And we gave up a lot of who we were just to be that person who got acceptance and love. And And we left a lot of ourselves behind in that process. And so in my work, I help them remember, regain, and reaccess, reintegrate, and really become that confident, authentic self that they're meant to be. And that's where they really discover how to create the success and fulfillment in their life that they want.
Beautiful. I love that. What kind of therapy modalities do you use when you're doing all that?
The simplest I could find on my own journey. First of all, just getting people to breathe again is the biggest challenge. Mm. So I can get them to breathe and ask and answer questions. That's going to begin the journey. I use a lot of sentence completion because they have to breathe into and say and complete the sentence. And when they do that, that engages the right brain, which puts them in touch with their emotions, and the breathing puts them in touch with their heart and their feelings. So all of a sudden they're engaging and recognizing, accessing awareness and knowledge that they didn't even know they had. Mm-hmm. And that's what takes them into the deeper levels of healing. They reconnect with that inner child and reparent that child and reconnect really with all aspects of who and what they are. And it's that, yeah. I mean, a lot of the people who come to me are in leadership. And so initially they might want to, you know, they're a CFO and they might want to become a CEO, or they want to make more money, or whatever that outer goal is. And they quickly learn that really the biggest challenge I see in leadership today is that they're looking outside of themselves for things that can only be found within. And so I share with them and guide them into how to access themselves, and as they evolve in life, to continue to look deeper and access even more of who and what they are. And that takes them fairly quickly beyond that sense of self, that ego-oriented sense of self, into a broader sense of self that includes others, connects them with others, the world. And that takes them into developing a higher intention that really includes serving and supporting others. And even as a leader, their leadership role becomes one of, okay, how do I bring out the best in everybody right. working in and around me? And in doing that, everybody becomes more cooperative, collaborative, productive, and profitable. So it all works.
Yeah, I love everything you said, because I feel like so often people think leadership is about like commanding others, but it's really about like commanding your own mindset first, right? And
certainly initially, yeah. You have to. I mean, you know, it's just back to that getting love as a child. A lot of leaders really they're very smart, and they got attention. They got acknowledgement and love for being smart, for doing well in school. And that got them into the right university, and that got them into the right job. And when they come to me, is, you know, they usually have a great deal of success, but they've kind of hit that, you know, glass ceiling, that something's holding them back. And what's holding them back is their lack of self-awareness and emotional intelligence to really bring out the best in others, to be able to know how to be vulnerable and trust themselves. And then without that inner confidence, that authenticity and trust in who and what you are, you really don't know what you're capable of, and you don't know how to access the best of who and what you are. And so you're always kind of wondering, you know, am I enough, for all those little questions that sneak through our subconscious mind. But as you shift all those subconscious, all that 90% of our brain that we're not even aware of, that dominates and controls our life, as we shift that more into conscious mind, then we can really, in the quietness of our mind, have a mindset that allows us to access, quite literally, neurologically, the best of who we are. You know, that amygdala isn't running the show any longer, the emotional center, the forebrain begins to, as you quiet the mind, begins to develop and blossom into the conscious CEO of your life, and the right and the left brain start to get along, and all of a sudden you have integrated whole brain thinking that certainly enhances your brain considerably, your thinking, and gives you access to higher level thinking. But then you, as you further that journey, you get into what I call big mind, where rather than trying to think about an answer or figure out things, you quiet your mind and invite the answer to come in.
So do you do meditation with these people too?
Oh, you might mention that. Yeah.
are they surprised? Because they come to you
naked in there.
Because they want more money. They want that bigger title. And you're like, all right, we need to talk to your inner child. We need to meditate. We need to breathe. Like, are they ever like thrown off?
Well, I do it very subtly. They tell me. I don't ever tell anybody anything. My job is to breathe and be present and curious. And from that, I watch my guidance kind of allow them to discover what they need and who they are. And they get very excited about that because they recognize, oh, that's where all my blocks, limitations, saboteurs, and everything comes from. And as they learn to empower themselves, literally rewire their brain neurologically, they all of a sudden have a whole different life, a different mindset.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you change your thinking, you change your life, right?
Yeah, literally.
Yeah, and there's so many different modalities around coaching and somatic healing and therapy and all these things that like really kind of do the same thing, right? It's like get rid of these blocks, these limited thoughts, these, you know, this inner voice that wasn't even yours to begin with, that all these things are holding you back. And like so many people aren't even aware of, right? It's hard to be aware of what's holding you back.
They're not at all aware of. So my job is to help them become aware and to stay aware and to learn to evolve. You know, most people are kind of stair-stepping their life through comfort zones that really are limiting and killing them eventually. And so what I show them is how change, which is what they fear the most generally, is really the only, you know, thing that you can trust. Change is, you know, the one reality that's going to be an intrinsic part of your life. And so if you can learn to embrace change and learn to evolve, then you're always breathing and being present, breathing and letting go, breathing and becoming. And what you're becoming is just that more expanded sense of self that integrates you into and supports you in your highest aspirations.
Why do you think people fear change so much?
They fear themselves. Mm-hmm. Fear is the biggest religion we have going on. You know, people trust that. You know, I had a client the other day who, you know, a very great guy, really is, and you know, great CFO who wants to become, and I think is certainly capable of becoming a CFO. But due to his childhood, he had some very serious concerns about ever letting go, about not getting, you know, not controlling and using his left brain to logically figure everything out. And, you know, what he recognized was that due to his alcoholic father, his father's addiction to alcohol was matched by his fear of letting go of, you know, trusting his left brain and feeling like he was in control. He was able to see that his definition of control was literally a definition of being completely out of control. Mm-hmm. And in that insight, in that awareness, he was like, oh, yeah, I mean, that rocked his world. And so he was willing to move forward and begin the process of quieting his mind, which is where I begin. You know, they've already learned to breathe. They've already learned to trust that breathing is really what's going to open up their, heal their past, open up their heart, and that opens up their mind. So they begin to learn to trust and use that breathing. You know, meditation, you know, I've been teaching it for 50 years. So they're all about single-pointed focus. I don't care whether you're a whirling dervish or, whatever it is your focus is, but meditation is about a single-pointed focus. And so since breathing is always there and always handy, and there's a variety of breaths that you can use to get you into and through and beyond everything, then you begin to trust that breath, and that takes you into the depths of who you are, and the, you know, into enlightenment, into optimizing your performance and to being able to love, being able to receive love. And yeah.
Have you ever had someone have a profound spiritual experience in your office? Like through the meditation and the breathing?
Oh, just about weekly.
Really? Like not just like insight, like aha moment, but like spiritual experience.
Sure. Yeah.
Wow. That's amazing.
I count on it.
What a gift that is to be able to witness that.
Yeah. It's, well, the greatest gift I have is to be able to facilitate it. And the other gift is that I get to participate and be a part and enjoy watching that shift that takes place. And it's such a tremendous shift that it does change their world. I mean, you know, they come in wanting to make more money or deal with outer challenges. You know, they've learned, and CEOs are really good at whack-a-mole. They take care of all these immediate problems and they get rewarded for doing that. And what they begin to recognize is most of those challenges are really created by their own inner issues that haven't been healed. And as they heal those outer issues diminish and the opportunity to then support others becomes the game. And, you know, so, you know, I just worked with a guy, first worked with him in the, just after COVID, and he's extraordinarily, you know, 5 9-figure businesses. He's down in your area. And, you know, so he's been working with me for off and on for 5 years, first year very intensely. And, you know, but he's about, you know, he literally, he's got these international businesses that are all now just blossoming on levels that he never anticipated because of the transformation he's gone through and the way that he's supported others and the organizational development that came out of that. And so he was, again, about to go into this new expansion. And basically, and, you know, I flew down and was there just a couple of weeks ago with him and guided him into recognizing, taking him into levels of consciousness and breathing, where he was able to, sorry about that, he was able to really see the perfection of all that he had created and how it all was working together and serving and supporting him in letting go again. And letting go of trying to control it all and being a mentor and not having to do it all, but let them be it all. Trust his teams more fully, trust, you know, his wife more fully, trust his kids more fully, trust that he'd created all of this amazing thing, but it was being held back by his fears of losing control. And he's let go of control on tremendous levels. But it's always just another level of breathing and letting go, breathing and becoming. And so, you know, even at his incredible level, he's still doing that same dance that we all do until we finally let go completely.
I love that story because it like illustrates so clearly how our inner world can affect our business, right? Which when you first said, you know, all of these like problems that you're trying to whack the moles, like are actually created from your inner world and your past, that I was like, okay, but yeah, that makes total sense. Cause our environment really is a reflection of us, right?
I think you might notice that in time. Yes. We do create our own reality and everything is, you know, your level of consciousness determines how you see, experience and react to everything in the world, everything that comes into your world. And so the truth is that if you learn to breathe and heal your emotional past, your backlog, and you open up your heart and mind, you learn to recognize that, oh, I can breathe into any level of consciousness that I want. I can breathe into, so if I'm dealing with something that's challenging or uncomfortable for me, that's fine. I just need to breathe into, look at what that emotional, you know, essences of that and heal that. And, you know, so that I can move into a level of consciousness and see what my best next step is. And that's always available to anybody so that they always can continue to evolve and move forward.
So what specific breathing techniques do you use to help move into these levels of consciousness so that you can see things from a new perspective?
Well, the first one is to open your mouth and take in a big breath. That scares the hell out of a lot of people.
Really?
I've studied breathing. I all the different aspects of it for years. So I've narrowed it down to, if you want to just, most people are going through life with their foot on the gas pedal, and that's gotten them the success level that they're at. When they come to me, what I show them is that they also have their other foot on the brake, and they've got maybe 40, even 50% or more of their energy on that brake pedal. So they don't need to push harder on the gas pedal, which is their initial temptation or thought about it. They just need to heal and let off all that controlling their emotional backlog that, as my mentor Joseph Campbell said, you've got to, I never say it correctly, but anyway, you've got to enter that cave you fear to enter and to find the treasure that you seek. And that treasure, of course, is yourself. That treasure is that unconditional love that you can only find by giving it to yourself. And doing that, then you find the courage, the strength to breathe and feel, to breathe and transform neurologically your mind. And so, you do an open mouth Bashrika breath to move yourself forward, and that helps you kind of stay centered and moving forward. And then you do a closed Bashrika breath where you're slightly constricting the throat as you exhale into the mouth, and that builds energy, and that gets uncomfortable for anybody because it's like, oh, okay, that's as much as I can handle for now. Then you go into a soft belly breathing, maybe saying in and out as you breathe in and out inwardly, and or just silently breathing in and out. And, if something rocks your world, then you shift back down to the open mouth and then bring yourself back up into the soft belly breathing. So, I have just found that the simpler I can make it, the more likely everybody will remember how to do it. Just like shifting a car. When you take off, you have it in first gear, and then if you don't know how to drive a stick shift anyway, I'm not sure everybody does anymore, but, you shift into the fourth gear when you're on the freeway and zooming down. But if something happens in front of you, you need to downshift, and that's the same in your life. You're always shifting those gears in relationship to what's going on in your life. That way you're always supporting yourself and evolving, moving forward, and staying present.
I really like the car metaphors, especially like the foot on the pedal and the brake at the same time. It made me think, like, if someone feels like they're pushing really hard and they're like trying to make this breakthrough and it's just like not happening, and they're like doing all the things on paper, like, could they be sabotaging themselves behind the scenes without even realizing it? And why does that happen?
You think?
Yeah, well, someone listening might need to hear you say that. So.
Yeah, they're absolutely sabotaging themselves. As children, we create all sorts of tools and beliefs and voices in our head, and those voices that help us so much as a child. If a child came to me and said, I'm dealing with this particular situation and this is how I avoid it, this is how I protect myself, I'd say, great, you're doing a great job. This is my program for getting love, and this is who I think I need to be. Great, keep doing that. But by the time you start getting into your teens, or especially into your 20s, then rather than looking outside to get that love and acceptance that you've always wanted, it's time to start looking within and learning to love and accept yourself. And so, unfortunately, that all that emotional backlog that's hidden in that cave that we're afraid to open, afraid to even acknowledge we have, which is your fear of change coming back up again. But, we've got to open that huge door to that cave, and we need to really support ourselves or help with guidance to empty it out. My goal is to, you know, my cave has party lights and music on, and my friends go in there whenever they want. And if they see something I need to clean up, they help me with that. And
I love that.
You know, most people have that cave door slammed shut, and you know, their emotions only sneak out, and you know, inappropriately oftentimes. And you know, that's when you know you have emotional backlog, when something happens and you get over frightened or over angry or over responsive. And you know, be in relationship, if that hasn't happened, that'll trigger it more fully.
And, yeah, right, because they're just like a mirror.
Right, exactly.
Man, so I'm a parent of a 16-month-old, and I'm actually mm-hmm. pregnant. I'm like, how do we not screw up our kids? everyone has stuff from childhood.
Your question is, how do I be a perfect parent? And it's impossible. You will do what you do. But what you can do is begin to train your child as they get older to look within themselves, train them to breathe, train them to feel comfortable with all of their emotions. You know, not, you know, I grew up in a family that, boy, anger just wasn't, you know, my parents loved themselves more than, I mean, they loved each other more than any, I mean, they were the most loving couple I'd ever been around, literally. You know, other than my wife now, I don't think I've ever seen a more loving couple.
That's cool.
But they didn't ever argue. Well, I married the girl next door, my high school sweetheart. Actually, she lived about two blocks away. But her parents were really good at arguing. Mm. You can imagine what my first year of marriage was like. You know, I was just like, I'd literally just take our son and go for a bicycle ride to avoid it, because I had no idea how to deal with anger and her rage. And most of the time, I didn't even know what it was about. And so it was very confusing and overwhelming. And so, yeah, but, you know, there's tools. There's, you know, you can, there's a book called Positive Intelligence that helps you understand what your saboteurs are, that you can begin to explain those to their child so they can begin to, while they let their saboteurs manage their life and protect them as a young child, they can begin to recognize when the saboteur is coming up and shift it into a sage by breathing and being present and curious enough to look more deeply and see what a better option would be. So while your saboteur might rattle on for days and months or ever, you know, dominating your life, when a saboteur comes up and you have, you're more present and aware, more conscious, then you catch it and move it into a sage mode of being curious and present and, you know, looking for how you solve, you know. I mean, the truth is, and again, the higher consciousness you're in, the more easily it's seen, but everything that comes into our life is perfectly designed to support us in our growth and opening up our heart. But, you know, if you're afraid or you haven't healed your past, then you don't see that. It's scary and you close down even more. So you want to really support your child in getting in touch with, being emotionally intelligent, being self-aware as they, you know, that's going to shift as they get older and older. But certainly by the time they're in the mid-teens, they should have a deep understanding of their mind and how to quiet their mind. You know, if you can't quiet your mind, if you can't stop thought, then you're not in control of your mind. And your mind, that subconscious, that rattling around noise is in charge of you. You know, so, you know, teach them how to meditate, teach them how to breathe, teach them how to focus. Empower them to be who they truly are, even if it's not who you think they should be. You know, my father, I think I was in my 30s, he didn't even come to public meetings and, you know, with hundreds of people asking me questions. And he still, when somebody asked him, what is he doing? He goes, I think he teaches yoga or something like that. It's like, you know, I remember my mom saying about my niece when she graduated from college, oh, she's the first one to graduate from college. It's like, here I am with.
You're like, I have a PhD.
Well, beyond that. And, it's funny. You know, and it's like, they just didn't know who I was. And, and that was part of the cost of me choosing to be me rather than who they wanted me to be. That's the difficulty with a parent. Everybody parents don't love unconditionally unless they love themselves unconditionally. You know, loving unconditionally means you trust that the child can become who they are, not who you think they should be. They'll find their way in life and not under the control and of how you want them to be, who you want them to be, and what you think they should do.
Yeah,
that give you a good primer. That give you a good primer.
Yeah, no, that was a great answer. I love that answer. Mm-hmm. You know, I listen to a lot of Joe Dispenza. Are you familiar?
Yeah.
And just this morning, I was listening to him talk about how you have that one emotion, or maybe there's more, but like that one that you like always fall back on. And I was thinking about it while you were talking about your ex-wife, where it was like anger for her, right? Do you find that to be true, where it's like we have that one thing, whether it's guilt or shame or blame or anger or anxiety, that like is kind of like our default setting that we like go unconsciously back to?
I wouldn't say that's an overall truth. I would say for some people that's true. You know, I think he takes information and passes it along, and I think he does a very good job with that. I don't think he doesn't have a deep sense of transformational work that would take you deeper into that. You know, I mean, I know all those people quite well. I've been around them. You know, John Gray is a good friend, and
Oh, really? John Gray endorsed my book.
Yeah. We were neighbors in Mill Valley, and I worked with he and his wife Barbara DeAngelis in Los Angeles with the Making Love workshops, which were just what he did before his main book came out. Yeah,
that's cool. He's also spoken. He spoke at an event I spoke at too. Yeah, that's very cool.
He's a great guy.
Yeah, I guess like the circle is small, like the world is small once you kind of get out there.
Yeah.
No, that helps. So is there anything we didn't cover today that you like really want to talk about, or you really want to like get out into the audience?
Give yourself a break. Learn to love yourself. Learn to breathe and accept and love yourself. It's what you're doing here. You know, this the world is a big puzzle, and you're a piece of that puzzle. And we need you in that puzzle to help make it, you know, the image that we'd all enjoy being a part of. And so, yeah, let go of fear. You know, take that off of your altar. let go of thinking that, you know, that being in control looks like managing your life and controlling everything. You know, my only job in my life at this point is to breathe and be curious and present. Because if I'm breathing, being curious and present, then I'm in a state of consciousness where I can optimally handle anything that comes into my life. I don't have to anticipate what a client's going to come up with or what my challenges might come into my life. All I have to do is breathe and be present. And it's that simplicity that allows me to be in that silence and trust, you know, gaining, receiving wisdom, knowledge that I need to really, you know, support me on the levels that I want to play in. You know, yeah.
Yeah. So if someone, fear is such a big thing, right? Fear and the sense of control that you mentioned both of those. And I'm just thinking about like, you know, so many people like will turn on the news and it's like alarmist, right? Or especially like during the last few years, or I don't know. It just feels like everyone's like so wound up so tightly. Like how does someone, and I feel like I know your answer is going to be breathe, but like how does someone navigate all this craziness in the world? You know, it's like,
you've got to understand that they turn on that news so that they intentionally put that in their mind to validate their fear.
I love that response.
Keep it in the logical left brain, so they can try and be afraid and effort more and try harder. And I mean, they're creating this hump. What's that little critter that runs around?
A hamster wheel. A little critter.
Yeah, they're on their own hamster wheel, and they just keep doing things that support them in being on that. And until they get exhausted, until things get bad enough, they feel that puts them in some kind of control. I can tell you for a fact that, I mean, I work with thousands of people through the years. Every one of them, you know, they don't want to lose control. And when I look at their definition of control and I help them understand what that really looks like, they begin to see that their definition of control that they're holding on to so tightly is really a definition of being completely out of control. Because their definition of control is that noisy mind. In a noisy mind, I mean, we're only aware of about 5 or 10% of our thought. And so that other 90% of subconscious, which has full access to our emotional backlog, runs our life. And until we heal that, we are not in control. We'll never even know what we're capable of. The chemical gates between your higher level thinking and your midbrain, for example, they just aren't open. It's no wonder you're afraid. You know, that's a scary place. It would scare me. I mean, if all of a sudden I lost access to higher level thinking and I couldn't stop thought, wow, that would be scary. But fortunately, I know that all I need to do is use my breath to take me back to center, to quiet my mind, so that I can see the optimum next best step for me to take. It'll move me forward in life and allow me to serve and support others.
I really loved that you said they're doing those things. They're, you know, watching the news or, you know, getting in fights with their neighbors or whatever it is, or to like reaffirm their own stuff, their own beliefs, right? Yeah, that was such a brilliant answer.
Yeah, I remember, you know, you were talking about John, and I remember John, he was an example. He was, you know, they lived in L.A. at the time, and, you know, John was in the backyard, and he was arguing with his neighbor, or the neighbor was arguing with him, and wanting him to do something or be something that he, you know, wasn't ready to do. And the neighbor really got riled up. And John got a little riled up, and he recognized, oh, that's my emotional backlog coming up, because the situation was really, you know, a moot point. It was nothing. But when you see your level of emotion, whether it's fear, anger, you know, hurt, pain, whatever it might be, shame and guilt, you know, if that rises beyond just a momentary insight, if it rises beyond what seems reasonable to have in response to whatever is going on, that's your indicator that you've got emotional backlog that is ready to be healed. You know, that's the perfection of life, is if whenever you're feeling an emotion, whenever something is triggering you emotionally, that's nothing but your being saying, I'm ready to heal and grow. There's a part of me that's ready to heal and grow. And most people contract around that rather than expand and explore that and heal that. You know, it's literally any challenge in our life is nothing but an indicator to support us in our own growth. You know, and all you have to do is learn to breathe into and open to and see the optimum next best step so that you can continue on your journey.
I really love that because, you know, everyone's heard like triggers show you where you're unhealed, right? But that makes a lot of people really defensive. But I love the way that you phrased it, where triggers are actually showing you this thing that wants to heal. Like, what a beautiful invitation instead, right?
Absolutely. And I think that's why I do well with clients, is because I'm really congratulating them on what they've done so far. And now it's like, okay, now you're ready to continue to grow. And so now here's new tools. Here's new ways of dealing with things, doing things. And so then when they come in, they don't feel like, geez, I've screwed up my life and I'm a big mess and that. No,
yeah, there's no shame.
I can, yeah. Because that's only helping them contract down more and stay in the chaos of it all. But if they, as they begin to learn to breathe and heal, as they get that emotional backlog handled fully, or at least enough, then they begin to, when something comes up, they breathe into it. They go, oh, well, what's that? And they see the feeling, they look beneath that and see the situation or the whatever happened in the past, where it came from. Usually by that time, they just breathe into that and it dissipates. And then they expand into the person they need to be to move forward in their life into whatever they're doing, to become the leader they need to be the parent they need to be, any and all of that.
So let me ask you this. If only 5 to 10% of our thoughts are conscious and the rest is subconscious, and a lot of that emotional baggage is like in the subconscious, can we heal that consciously? Or do we need to like go into a meditative state or a hypnotic state or something?
There's two ways to do it. One is you go to Tibet and you meditate in a cave for lifetimes and it'll work.
That's my brother-in-law. He's literally in the Himalayas right now.
I'm a big fan. I probably meditated 30,000 hours by the time I was in my late 30s. I'm a big fan of that. Or you can, you know, come to somebody like myself who can guide you. That's all I am, is a guide. I just guide them on this journey deeper into themselves where they can, you know, supportively open that cave door and process and supportively process and heal. You know, it's like a hoarder. You know, the first, you know, if you've ever worked with a hoarder, I have a friend who does that, and it's like, you know, when you try and get them to throw out that first piece of paper or the one of the 3,000 t-shirts they have or whatever it is, you know, when you try and get those first few things, you know, to get them to throw them out, it's life-threatening to them because everything protects them, everything insulates them and is value to them. But if they start letting go, the more they let go, the more they let go. And at some point, you have a team of people come in and they just throw everything into the dumpster, and the person is fine with it, quite literally. And that's how it is with this. Once people open that cave door and they are vulnerable enough to acknowledge and express some of their feelings, then they go, oh, wait a minute, I'm beginning to see where all these issues are coming from. And then they begin find the courage, the excitement, the passion to really get in there and do the work that needs to be done. And in that it results them becoming that confident, authentic person. And I mean, it really only takes a couple of months to really make a huge shift in your life. It's not this going to talk therapy for years in and years out. It's really got nothing to do with that. You've got to find somebody who can guide you comfortably and supportively into that cave with you and let you see what an amazing human being you truly are.
Amazing. I'm sure everyone wants to work with you that's listened to this conversation now. So how do you work with people? Where do they find you? Do you work with people on Zoom, I'm assuming?
Well, I they would just go to my website and they could explore what I offer. There's some things there for free that they're welcome to download that might be helpful for them. But they would just get on a discovery call with me, and that's, I've had more than a few people this month say, I got more out of this call in 20 minutes than I got that 20 years of therapy. And
wow.
That's true, because, you know, it doesn't, therapists are just, I mean, I remember when we were in Mill Valley, I had tons of therapists coming to my office working with me, and every one of them had recognized that, oh, I've got this issue that I haven't healed within myself, and that doesn't allow me to work with clients. You know, there might be anger or shame or whatever it might be. But as they heal it, then they weren't able, you know, previously, what if they just talked around it or through it, or and said, okay, now you're fine. But when they heal it within themselves, then they're not shy to really open themselves up to being in an environment where somebody else is acknowledging and expressing that fully. So, yeah.
Amazing. Well, if you're listening, Ron's website is in the show notes. You'll be able to find it there. Ron, thank you so much. This has been such a great conversation. We said before we knew it was going to be, so I just appreciate you so much. I appreciate what you're doing in the world.
I really enjoyed it, Chris. I really did. And you take care of yourself, and I'm sure you're going to be a great mom.